Hello and welcome to the Customer Insight Leader Podcast. Data, analytics, big data science, machine learning, customer insight, behavioral science, blockchain, data ops, data engineering, agile working. Phew, too many terms, too many things to think about. Do you as a leader need somewhere to turn? To hear what other leaders are doing? To hear what really makes a difference in your business? Welcome. The Customer Insight Leader Podcast is here for you. Each episode, we'll be interviewing a different leader in the fields of customer insight, data, and analytics to hear what they really do, what really makes a difference. So settle down, get that cup of coffee, and enjoy the Customer Insight Leader Podcast. Hello and welcome to the Customer Insight Leader Podcast, a place to hear from today's leaders in the fields of customer insight, data science, and analytics. I'm your host, Paul Loughlin, and with me today is Dr. Mariam Ramazani-Bash. Mariam is the VP of Data and Analytics for GoStudent, Europe's most valuable edtech company and one of the world's leading online tutoring providers. Before joining GoStudent, Mariam has led data and analytics teams for businesses as prestigious as Sky, Adidas, and within WPP. She describes her passion as creating new, innovative teams and customer-centric products that create brand desire. So it sounds like a great focus for a leader we want to have on this podcast. I should also say that Mariam's joining us from Munich today, so we're also extending our European reach on this podcast. Welcome, Mariam.
Hi, thank you so much for inviting me.
You're more than welcome. It's great to have you on the podcast. I was reflecting, I'm aware we've been in touch on LinkedIn for a number of years now, and I know you've also been a loyal follower of the Customer Insight Leader blog, so I'm delighted to finally have you on the show.
Thank you. I'm also really happy to be here. I have been also listening to some of the podcasts, really interesting, and I think it's really nice to get to the other side and learn about the people side of the data. So thank you again for creating this podcast and also inviting me.
Brilliant. That's very kind of you, Mariam. Thank you very much. I'm glad that I'm hearing more and more people value that people side and getting to know data leaders as people. So that is good to hear. Okay, let's crack on with my first question then. As someone who listens to the podcast and regular listeners will be aware, I always ground us first in people's backstory, where they're coming from, so that we know the experience that they've got to share. So, Mariam, could you tell us a bit about your background and how you got into the world of data and analytics?
Yes, thank you so much. Again, I think I start in very, very early from my background. I'm originally from Iran, and I have been raised and grown there. I'm from a generation that there was a very huge population at the time that I was born. So entering university was very, very difficult and very competitive. In order to get to a good university, we have to go through a very competitive exam, which 1 million people are attending. And if you want to go to a good university, you have to be maybe in the top 1,000. I was very hardworking, and I was one of the people which was like the below 200. Even though at that time I felt like that I liked the software piece of IT and I liked maybe the software piece, I didn't start with that. I talked to professors and got advice. And at that time, in my country, if you were smart and if you knew everything, have done really, really good in the exam, you would start with electrical engineering. And that's where I started my education.
Okay.
I finished my bachelor in electrical engineering with a good grade, but I didn't really feel like this is something that this hard work piece and hard. I didn't feel like it's my passion.
Sure.
And in order to go to the master's, we actually again have to have this difficult exam. And I didn't dare to go to the IT piece because I felt like, okay, I don't have the background that the other people have studied for years. So I continued with the electrical engineering exam. Okay. I just did the exam, and I was lucky when I wanted to select which university I go to, there was a graduate university in Tehran which offered an interdisciplinary area in information management, which was basically bringing people from electrical engineering, from from computer science and from industrial engineering together. And it was a very interdisciplinary topic, which management was part of it, was also a little bit of IT part of it.
Right.
And there I did my master's. That was my first time, which was I really got in touch with data. I did my master's in data mining. At that time, it was called pattern recognition. And actually, the topic was about the prefetching pages on the web, which is now it's called web personalization. At that time, the reason to do that was not so much the personalization piece, was because the internet was slow. It was still dial-up. And you wanted to predict what is the page that the customer will look afterwards.
I remember those slow days, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like now so old, but it happened so fast, everything. So the technology improved so fast. And yeah, I think that's my starting point. That was when I really fell in love with the topic and I decided to continue in this area. I moved to DePaul University in Chicago for my PhD. And in the same topic, it was about web intelligence and recommender systems. And I started in 2006 my PhD. And after 3 years of doing my PhD, so I finished my coursework and everything. And I had done an internship in IBM Research Hawthorne in New York in recommender system topics, which was really, really interesting.
Mm.
But I also met my husband there.
So
love brought me to Germany because my husband is German, and we came in 2009 to Germany, and I decided to do the long distance relationship with my professor instead of
what a good choice.
Yes, but my professor didn't like long distance relationships, so kind of like ended up there. And I was lucky enough to find a professor and also a mentor in Germany in Karlsruhe University who supported me to continue and basically finish my PhD in Karlsruhe University in Germany. Mm. I actually continued to work on the data field, and I was sponsored by SAP for my PhD. So I joined SAP as a researcher after that, and I was working at that time. It was 2009. I can't believe now it's 2022. At that time, I was working on projects from 2020. So that was really, really visionary projects at that time. So if you think about it, you want to do something, develop something for the next 10 years, it's usually like you don't even know how the world looks like.
Yeah.
And this is really interesting now looking back. For example, we're working on smart grid, smart house, on an electric car, intelligent charging, and topics that now is actually becoming a reality. Yes. Even though it was really, really interesting and I enjoyed working in this kind of like a research environment, as a data person, I miss data because you need real data if you really want to do data mining. Mm-hmm. So we had to do a lot of simulation, and that was not something that really took my interest. And that's why I actually joined a startup company called Corskin. They had at that time, which had been developing data management platform. That's one of the most advanced DMPs of the industry at that time. At that time, all of the DMPs needed between 12 to 24 hours to update their customer segments. And we had developed a technology that was doing this real time.
Right.
And doing like a really audience-based advertising targeting. So it was a very interesting technology, which I joined as a data scientist and helped building these models for doing the targeting. And the company was acquired by 24/7 Media, part of WPP, which was then later merged with Saxis. Because they were really interested in bringing this technology to the globe. So we were only German based, and then they wanted to really bring it to all of the markets in the globe. And that's where I moved from data science to product management. So I helped to build this technology on a newer tech stack and also develop it for all of the markets that Saxis was active in. And I knew all of the details and the technical piece, and I was also very interested about connecting to the customer. So I was like one of the best persons who could translate all of the needs of the customers to language that software engineers can really understand and develop. And after when we developed this, then our CEO, Mark Greta, at that time told me that we have developed a Ferrari. Now we need drivers who can drive it. So that's when I moved to actually to a training role. So I was working with agencies and with clients to understand their advertising needs, and then help them to how to use this new technology, this DMP, to build the type of audiences that would help them in their goals. That's a role that actually was maybe the most front-end business role that I have ever done. I think it was interesting for me to be more on the business side, to understand the needs, but I also felt like I missed this building and creating. So that's what that I'm really passionate about, is building the new, creating the new thing. So if you are always only hearing and helping, then I'm not building. I was basically mostly translating how to use what already exists.
I see.
That's the time that then I was contacted by Adidas. So that's in 2015 when I joined as director of marketing intelligence in Adidas.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, Adidas did not have really a CRM analytics, and a digital analytics team was really, 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 really small. So I was like the first person joining as marketing intelligence and data science in the area of e-commerce, and it's unbelievable how big it got. So we had the strategy of creating the new, and we had the digital transformation, a lot of focus on bringing the focus. So at that time, Adidas was a lot about wholesale, and not so much really looking after the customer directly. And that was a big change that I was really happy and proud to be part of, to really have changed Adidas to become a membership focused company who's really focused on the customer. So I started as one person team. When I left, I think we had more than 100 data scientists and analysts in this area.
Wow.
And I was one of the first ones who actually built the segmentation strategy for Adidas, also the CRM analytics, and how to do data-driven marketing, how to use all of these segments and data for being more data-driven in all of the different channels of the marketing. I think Adidas was, it's one of the very great experiences of my career, and I'm still really love to be there and talk to the colleagues. I had my second child in 2019.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. And I think when I wanted to go back, I felt like that the company and the team is really mature enough. So I'm really interested in building new and creating new, and it's like it's more the execution piece. So that's where I then left to Sky as the VP of data, where I brought different team members who were across the business, some people across the IT, and I brought everybody together to build the one full product-driven agile data team. Which is based on we had developed a strategy and roadmap of what are the data products that we can create and how can we bring all of these people and build that. I also established data governance there. And I think Sky was a little bit short, but I'm also, it was really an enjoyable time. And I will be joining Go Students soon as a full-time as VP of data. And I think Go Student is something that their purpose, unlock the potential of every child, has been resonating very well with me, because I feel like I really believe that every child has something special that needs to be developed and discovered. And you can see AI and personalization is so much in shopping or in advertising in many, many topics, but I don't think we have really used it enough in education. So that's one of the reasons that I was very passionate about Go Student, and I'm looking forward to my new role there.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Thank you, Mariam. Thank you for sharing all that. Yeah, what a lovely story. I'm really struck by how much you got to real clarity on where your passions are, these whole themes of data-connected roles, and of creating new products and building teams and bringing together functions. And even in this new role, you're just starting this real connection to purpose. You've got a passion for the purpose that you're doing. It's great to hear that in a leader. So thank you for sharing that. In fact, given that you've shared how much that education and realizing children's potential matters to you, earlier on in your career story, you mentioned this whole challenge in Iran, which sounds like a very high standard early on in the education system. You needed to compete in that. I wonder whether you feel that served you well going forward. Did it develop strengths that have served you in the rest of your career? Has it helped you to develop as a data leader to be, I guess, so competitive so early on?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Of course, I haven't been in a different environment, so I couldn't judge how I'm.
No, sure.
But I think, I mean, this competitive environment, I think from one perspective, it made me to be as hardworking as I am, and also to learn that there's always competition there, so you need to compete, which is, I think, good for also in business to learn how to drive the business. There's always competitors, and how can you focus on the most important things, because that's what you really need to focus. Okay, this is because there's all the things that you need to learn, and the more competitive it gets, is how do I focus on the most important thing, which makes me more competitive than the others. So from this perspective, I think it has helped me. On the other side, when it comes to education at so early, I feel like there is also an importance of collaboration, and also this more understanding this enjoyment of learning or how to work with together. So I think that's the part that maybe in the education system that I grew up is missing, or missed at that time. Maybe they have been now, it's a little bit better. So I think, like everything, yes, there is always pros and cons.
Yeah, sure.
So I think maybe so much competition at that early age, maybe it can be less, I could say. But I think it also makes a little bit of this learning and more enjoyable for people who do want to compete. So there is like a motivation to show, okay, I can show something better than the others, which might be missing if you don't have that.
Yes. Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you, Mary. That's quite a nice balanced answer in terms of the drive to work hard and compete, which I agree is needed and sometimes underplayed these days for obvious reasons, because it's perhaps been overdone in organizations and cultures. But also that way that you've learned the importance of collaboration. And I think we certainly hear through your career that ongoing love of learning and developing. You touch on something, actually, when you began to talk about the competitive side, that I often find with my kind of coaching clients, and when training is quite important, is staying aware of the competitive world out there the organization is competing in. And even in your data and analytics world, knowing what's most important for the business to achieve, knowing the kind of commercial priorities, that kind of commercial awareness, I guess we could call it, in order to stay focused on where the competition really should be, which is beating the competitor out there rather than too much internal conflict. How have you, given that you started much more in kind of academia and on the technical side, how have you developed that commercial awareness then to know what's most important, so that you do, as you put it, kind of prioritize the most important work?
I actually, from the very beginning, even in research, I have been always asking myself, why am I doing this? So okay. Like an example that I can make for you. When I started my PhD, the very, very first thing that we were doing, I was in recommender system field, and there was the Netflix Prize. Actually, when I started, we were working on making recommender systems better. And sometimes I was thinking about, like, what's the point? We try to make 1% improvement. Anybody in the world cares about this? So I actually did ask myself, until that was like after 2 or 3 months that I started, the Netflix Prize started. That was really good timing. I was like, there is a company who's ready to pay $1 million for somebody who can make a 10% improvement. So there is some people who care about it. So I think just as a person, even if I was in the research, I wasn't always only thinking about the algorithm piece, but also about the why. So the more I got into the business, I also think more about if I'm doing this predictive model, or if you're investing so much, then what would be the impact of doing this? And it's something that I think it's a little bit of my strength, and I also learned through the way to think about business case. So if we want to do something, what is the business case? And before investing a lot of time on the data piece, to think about what would it be if we make a change? So what would that bring?
Yes. Yeah, that kind of commercial thinking right from the beginning, that makes good sense, Marion. I'm also struck in listening to you, and actually this has been one of the fascinating things in having such a diversity of data leaders on this podcast, the different views and the different approaches they've taken to education. So much of your early career has clearly been grounded in research, not just in working on your PhD, but the kind of research labs you worked in. Some of the other guests I've had on this podcast have either taken the sort of MBA, master's in business kind of focus. Or if I think of a guest like Dan Kellett, he made the case for not continuing in academia beyond the first degree and sort of staying just focused in the real world, as I'm sure Dan would put it, of kind of business. But others have, like you, taken a PhD approach and developed their technical knowledge to the highest degree. So how do you now think your work toward a PhD and your time in places like IBM and SAP's research labs have helped you develop into the data leader you are today? How has that approach helped you?
Great question. I also get this question a lot. Is it worth to do a PhD?
Yeah.
First of all, I think everybody should find their own path. But for me, there is two things that I think research has given me or can give anybody who goes that path. Mm-hmm. First one is the independent thinking and also understanding the current status, so the literature review. So that's when you want to do research, the most important thing you have to do is to understand where we are now, who has done what.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to make a research, if you want to make a paper or if you want to make a patent, you need to show something new, which means that you need to bring something from some other place, from another field, for example, or to change something a little bit to show an improvement.
Yes.
So the very first thing is this, I think this literature review and understanding where we are is a very important thing in as a leader. So when you arrive in an organization, this is the first thing you need to know. Where are we? What has been done? Who has done what?
Mm-hmm.
And where are the others? So this is like what you do in research as literature review. That's the first thing you need to do. You need to show who did what. And now I can do this. So to show the improvement on top of that. And I think that's something that you learn a lot. So it's a kind of like a practice that you have to do all the time. So I think it's something that becomes part of your mind. The way of working and also independent thinking is something that I see as a very valuable skill set. The other thing is about, I think, looking into the future. I was telling you the example of SAP where I was working on 2020 in 2009. So now if you, for example, somebody tells you, hey, come and I want you to work on a 2030 project, it's not very easy for everybody to imagine or think about what's the future look like and what is the project that I need to work on or what could be the life look like. At the moment, I think there are some businesses who are very short in thinking. So they just want to say, okay, this quarter was positive and not really think about. But I think that the success of a long-term success of a company does depend on leaders who can a little bit see the future and develop those focus areas that would be a competitive advantage for that business in the future. And I think that's something that you do a lot in research. So the research that I did for my PhD, for example, it was 2009, and I see those things now, and that they are reality. Sometimes I actually never thought that these things become reality, but now I see, and this is what you actually learn. I think when you do research, you learn to work on problems that don't exist yet. So it's just me. At that time, I was also sometimes thinking, okay, this problem would ever happen. Like for example, my PhD at that time was how would people try to manipulate recommender systems with own data, and now you see that happens a lot, for example, in Amazon or somewhere else, that people want to manipulate data. And at that time, the recommender system was so new that it wasn't even used a lot. So and this is something that I think it's a skill that you can learn doing a research or PhD to look into the future and work.
Great. What a great answer, Mariam. Thank you for that. I think it's probably one of the most comprehensive and persuasive answers I've heard as to the value of the PhD route. I think all too often from people who've gone down that route, I might just hear you really need to understand the technical so your people know that you understand it, and there's such a complex evolving field in data science, etc., which I find less persuasive. But I completely get what you're saying. I can see the need in leadership today and in the leadership we need for tomorrow.
Yeah, I think,
critical independent thinking, the longer term thinking you mentioned as well.
Yeah, and I think regarding the technology piece, I don't think that helps, because this technology is moving with the speed of...
Yes.
So if I had done my PhD 10 years ago, the things I did, like the algorithms that I used at that time, it was new. But now I cannot say if I have that, I cannot say, oh, okay, I'm on top of the technical skills, because things move fast. So I don't think for technical skills, it brings a lot, because in PhD, you do one thing very deep. I think that doesn't help so much. So if you want to be on top of technical, I think that's something that you need learning day by day in order to still be on top of the technology, because it changes so much. It has changed a lot from the time I finished my PhD.
Agreed, Mariam, completely. Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's much more important what you were saying about the ability to do the independent critical thinking, to be able to research your commercial environment and really understand that, and be able to do longer term thinking. We can really do in many organizations with senior leadership who thought longer term. So good points, Mariam, and I can see how that helps. Another part of your career story, which is a fascinating one with so many different elements, that I was impressed by, was your move into product management and then into a training role as well. And when you talked about those, you talked about, particularly, I guess, for the latter, your abilities to communicate, your abilities to be translators between the less technical and the technical teams. I wondered how you developed the skills to do that, because I guess what we'd heard earlier in your story was a very technical education, was PhD research. Your earlier career doesn't sound very focused on communication and translation. So what helped you develop those skills, Mariam?
Good question. I think people can do things really good if they are passionate about them. So there are people who I have seen, they're extremely passionate about writing code, and if they like somebody, I know people who want to just sit there, develop code morning to evening, and I think that's good if they enjoy it.
I agree, and I know some of them too. Go on,
and I don't think they should try to change it, maybe because that's what they enjoy, and I personally think that's what my passion has been from the beginning. So that's I love creating and building something new, and also understanding the customer need and why am I building something and why am I doing that. So and this people communication is also a piece that I enjoy. I like to understand the customer. I like to understand the business strategy and say, okay, now what's the technology or the data that we develop for that? So I think that the simple reason for doing for that is that I was interested about it. So I wanted to be more close to the customers and to the business. So I kind of like did much more conversations in that front. And even when I started, I created some kind of like documents to show how we can improve things on like both sides. So just to show, okay, what are like the business side of improvement, and then how would that be implemented in a technology environment?
Right. Okay. You know, that makes sense. In fact, listening to you there, I was also struck, and I may be completely off the wall with this, Mariam, so feel free to say no. We're thinking, of course, some of your skill in the translation from technical to non-technical might be related to how much you've translation has been a reality for you through your life, I guess, because like quite a few leaders on this podcast, you've traveled around the world a bit. You obviously had your life in your early life in Iran, in New York, in America, and in Germany. Do you think that's true? Do you think the fact that you've needed to master other languages and live the reality of translating as you've moved has helped you be good at the more generic translation skills of communicating effectively between technical and non-technical?
Definitely. I think it's even that piece is also maybe coming from my character that I would like to see the bigger picture.
Right.
So I think they're all related. So maybe like even for me coming out of Iran, for example, that was my main goal. I wanted to see the bigger picture of the world. I didn't want to just like, okay, stay in one thing. And I think that's also comes exactly as you said. So traveling and also working with many, many different cultures gives me to understand different perspectives. And that also helps when I want to translate something, I understand that I need to talk the language of the other person so that that person also understands what I am saying. So definitely, I think that's very relevant and helpful to give that bigger picture and also understand the relationships of how people think and work.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. No, I hear that in terms of more of a focus on this motivation for big picture thinking and people connection, not just the mechanics of translation. Thank you, Marion. And another thing that I was impressed by in your career progress was the step up into the director role at Adidas. Very impressive that. And also how quickly, relatively to most of us, you grew a very large team there. How did you, I guess it's a similar question, but a different skill set. How did you develop the commercial and the softer skills you must have needed as a leader to persuade and influence in that organization to make that kind of transition to operating at director level and growing a new and large function for that organization?
I mean, I have been lucky enough to have good leaders to learn from.
Good.
So in Saxis, I was reporting to Rosa Markaryan. She's one of the excellent leaders I know, which I had the chance to learn from. In Adidas, my manager was Jack Ohanessian. He's one of the best leaders I've ever met. So I think one thing was that I had the opportunity to learn from role models who were really excellent. And maybe that's the one that I would say is the good part, so the easy part of learning. And I would say that I also have learned some lessons in a hard way. So I don't say everything was fully flash, and because when I joined Adidas as a director of marketing intelligence and developing CRM analytics, and there was a lot of topics fully new for an organization that has been there for a long time. So there has been there was a lot of change coming for many people. So it wasn't easy. So there are some cases that I think I also learned in the hard way. So I remember sometimes I felt like something is very obvious and I go and tell the people, and then I learned from them that it's actually is not something that even comes to their mind. So I had to maybe work it in a different way. So I think it's both, for me, was both observing, and also I think Adidas has been Also a great company in terms of learning and education. So I had like several courses where I could learn to lead. So those were also some of those topics that helped me along the way, and I think also experience. So maybe sometimes doing the right thing and learning is right. And also sometimes I can say I did things that now when I think about it, how I approach the problem or a communication, I think, okay, I could have done better with now the experience that I have now. And I think with Adidas, so it was also maybe a good timing. So there was also, of course, my strengths in showing what we can do and what we can build, what data science can bring to our CRM and to our membership. And I think there was also readiness from the board for the overall digital transformation. So they came at the right time together to make it possible. So I could actually move very quickly after marketing intelligence. I also established consumer insights. And then I also established the digital advanced analytics. So we went beyond only the CRM. We also did the predictive analytics for trading, for operations, and because we could show the value. And I think that's one of the very important messages for every data leader, because sometimes the value of data can be hidden if you don't show it enough. Yeah. So it's very important to, even if it takes a hard work to show, to do a lot of like A/B testing, or also to show before, after, or there is a lot of techniques to show what would that be if we didn't have this, in comparison with what we have, to also show the value. Because I do see and I believe that we have shown that there is a lot of value in a lot of the use cases, but this also has to be shown and translated and to the executive leaders so that they can also see the value. And the more they see the value, the more investment they would also bring, because it's brings so much automation and brings also so much value in comparison with what you would do without it. And I think, so Adidas was one of those examples that could definitely show that value really, really well.
Yeah, I hear that. Lots of good advice there, Marion. I similarly have experienced the power of when you have the top leadership of the organization really willing to invest and focus in an area like this, and that incremental make a change and demonstrate the value and get more investment. That was very much my own experience at Lloyd's as well. I'm interested also in what you pulled out about some of the great leaders you got to work with. I know what a difference it can make in the lives of leaders to have had those kind of mentors as they go along in their career. Do you think you just got lucky in terms of, here's your new boss, oh, guess what, you're lucky, they happen to be a good mentor? Or did you look for people who you could recognize, I can really learn from them, I'm going to choose to work for them or develop a relationship with them so that they can mentor me? What was it? Was it luck, or did you select and choose and manage to spot good mentors?
Yeah, both. Actually, I did look for some mentors who were actually not my boss to learn from. Like, for example, the example of Rosa is one of those that I approached and wanted to work for her. So that is definitely the one that I proactively approached. In Adidas, I think it was luck, and I can say it can be both ways. So of course, I don't want to name, but I also had bad managers.
Yes,
and
of
I
course.
Think what is important is we have a proverb in Persian that you ask a person, how did you learn to be so polite? The person says, I learned it from the impolite. Whatever they did, I didn't do. So right. I think that's also learning from bad examples is also learning. So if you see something, so if you have like, I think that's also one of the things that I learn. If I see a behavior or something that is not motivating me, or I don't see that beneficial for the company, then I also learn not to do that. So I think that's also a good learning. But I think mentorship is of course, it's also like I also read a lot about leadership. So there's a lot of leadership books and things that I read. I listen to podcasts. So I spend a lot of time to understand and learn, especially in communication. I listen almost to audiobooks all the time to just learn and get better. So there's I think you can never stop learning. And regarding mentorship, there was the Shirley's example is that maybe it's not something that you really need to actively go and ask a person, hey, come and become my mentor, but to develop that in a more practical way. I did it both ways. So I also sometimes like approached some people, like there were some mentorship programs that Adidas that you could find a mentor. I also become a mentor sometimes myself to help others because I think that also helps, but also to develop relationships with people who inspire you for other reasons. So working more closely with people who you think are good leaders and working more closely with them is also something that can help. That's also something that I did and continue to do.
Great, great. That makes good sense. Once again, that passion for learning and education and that drive in you, it comes through in every answer, Miriam. Okay, we're coming toward the end of our time together, sadly, but I do want to, in my last question, protect some time, as I try to on these episodes, for people who are also earlier in their career. I know some of the listeners will be at your level and have succeeded to reach more senior levels, which they're trying to master at the moment. But some are also quite early in their career as maybe analysts or data scientists or data engineers. I wonder, given what you've learned, what would your advice be for those who are at that early stage in their career? Do you think now, looking back, they should just follow their passion? Or are there certain skills you would recommend they focus on developing?
Really good question. I personally, I mean, also having said my story, beginning story to you, I'm a big fan of following passion. I think you would grow much better. I think life is about enjoying the moments and things that you do. And I think if people follow their passion, they would succeed. And maybe like becoming a data leader, maybe it's not something that is even something interesting for everyone. So there's, for example, if you're a data scientist in early stages, there are people who then grow the data science path, become a principal data science, and they know everything in and out of for example, data science techniques, and they enjoy it more, and they might even have a more balance of what they enjoy. So I think, I personally think following the passion is what brings success and happiness rather than trying to create a path. And that's my recommendation, of course. You can also create a path and say, I need to learn this to become this. That's not the way I would go, because I personally think following the passion, enjoying the things that you do every moment is much more important than in specific paths.
Great. Thank you, Miriam. I'm not at all surprised that was your answer, but thank you for sharing that. I buy that call to have that motivation and realize that dream. That's brilliant. Thanks for your thoughts today. Thanks for even sharing a bit of Persian culture with that proverb. That was great. I'll remember that about politeness. And many thanks for your time today, Miriam. It's been a pleasure to chat with you.
Thank you so much again for inviting me. It was also really nice to talk to you, Paul. And thank you again for this podcast. I think it's really interesting. And also to hear your view about my story also is interesting for me because there are things that I have maybe not thought about. And then when you say, I'm like, oh, okay, that's how it is. So it was really nice to chat to you. Thank you.
Great. Oh, that's good to hear. Great. Thank you. And thank you everyone for listening. I hope you found that helpful and continue to listen to the Customer Insight Leader podcast. More great interviews coming up. And each week there's also fresh content on our blog, Customer Insight Leader, all one word.com. So you might want to check that out too. Before then, it just remains for me to say thanks again to everyone for your time. Have a great week, and perhaps you can reflect on some of the themes we heard from Mariam. That lifelong learning, that following your passion, what could that mean for you? How could more focus on that supercharge your career? Okay, that's enough for me. Bye for now. Have a great week, everyone.